It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Lavonier. In this hour, science fiction, later on from a broadcast of Suspense from 1958. But first, it's X-1 with the story The Seventh Order, an NBC episode first heard on May 8, 1956.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, one man whose personality belies his name is Quizmaster Groucho Marx. Because Mr. Marx is hardly one of the grouchy kind when it comes to welcoming guests and dispensing good humor on his Wednesday night quiz show, You Bet Your Life. Why don't you tune in and hear for yourself tomorrow? And while you're listening, don't forget that each Wednesday night there's more great entertainment when Jack Bailey and contestants play Truth or Consequences. And all of the staff on airtime join stars Giselle McKenzie in bringing you top musical listening. Enjoy music and fun tomorrow night on this station. And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the dramatization of a story by Jerry Sowell, The Seventh Order. Brentwood, Illinois, would have been just about like any other average community of 10,000 had it not been for Presser College, one of the country's finest small institutions of learning. Its residents were used to the pranks, the hazings, and the practical jokes of the students. But even Professor Ansel Tomlin was surprised when the blue humanoid came down the street and up to the porch where the professor was sitting in an old wicker rocking chair.
Pardon me.
Of course.
You are Professor Ansel Tomlin.
Yes, and you, I take it, are somebody from one of my psychology classes dressed up as a sort of a robot.
No. I am George of Xanthar.
Who?
I am here to learn all I possibly can learn of the planet Earth and its inhabitants. Less than 10 minutes ago, I landed not far from here in a spaceship, which I subsequently blew up and destroyed.
Now, let me explain. I am Tomlin of Brentwood. Less than 10 minutes ago, I was sitting on my porch peacefully marking exam papers. I intend to resume right now. Helen, would you get the phone?
It is your wife's sister calling with reference to the explosion of my spaceship.
Sure it is.
She merely wants to ascertain that your family was not affected.
Listen, George, be a good fellow and...
Oh, Mike.
Well, don't be alarmed, dear. It's a fraternity initiation or something.
Oh, well, it does look like the real thing. Oh, did you know there was an explosion outside of town?
An explosion?
Yes, blast of undetermined origin is what they said on the radio.
Oh?
My sister just called. She heard about it in the local station and wanted to make sure we were all right.
I see.
Well, I have something in the oven. My goodness, that's a wonderful costume.
Her sister lives 20 miles away. How did you know she'd call?
My mind circuits are telepathic. They pick up all conscious thought. To a distance of some 200 miles.
It couldn't be you arranged the whole thing, that it wasn't really her sister. How did you get here? Who or what are you?
I am a machine. The finest, most complicated machine ever made. I have a rather unique history, too.
Who made you?
Ages ago, on Xanthar, there was a race of humans. They made the first robots. Rather crude affairs. We class them as first-order robots. They are still used for menial tasks to some extent.
And... what order are you?
The highest, naturally. A seventh order robot. or rather a humanoid. We are the first in which there is not an automatic, no harm to humans cutoff.
I begin to see.
You will become aware of the fact that I am superior to you and to the rest of your race. I need no oxygen. I am never ill. I need no sleep. Every experience is indelibly recorded on circuits and is instantly available.
Tell me, George, do you have feelings?
I have an electronically controlled endocrine balance.
It's very interesting. And what is your mission here on Earth?
For the moment, I am here to study. I will live with you until it is complete.
You will what?
I will live with you. I will be with you all of your waking hours. While you sleep, I will go through your library. I need nothing. I want nothing.
Now, just a moment. What about my privacy?
When you desire privacy, I will study someone else. Your wife, perhaps. The female should be interested.
George, old man, I'm terribly sorry, but you'll have to wire back to your masters to make other arrangements.
That will be quite impossible.
Really?
You see, I have no masters.
Well, what about those humans back in Xantha, the ones who invented you seventh-order humanoid?
Oh, they are all quite dead. We destroyed them.
Destroyed?
You look alarmed. It was, after all, they or us. You see, our endocrine system permits us pride in ourselves. Naturally, being proud of ourselves, we objected to being ordered about in an incompetent way. So,
you killed them.
Exactly. Now, shall we go inside and inform your wife of my visit?
Suppose I refuse.
Professor, do you see that small dog playing on the lawn across the street?
Yes.
I will lift my arm and point at it. Observe.
It vaporized.
Exactly. Now then, shall we go in?
Yes. We'll go in.
Oh, there you are. Yeah. I see you brought your friend.
Helen, this is George. George of Xanthar. George is a machine.
Well, anybody can see that. It's the most convincing costume I ever saw.
Helen, it isn't a costume.
No?
No. He's really a machine.
Oh.
He's staying with us.
What?
Whether we like it or not.
Well, really, Andrew.
We have no choice.
I am a seventh-order humanoid. I detect that your mind does not comprehend. I am here as an advanced scout for my race. After we establish a station here on Earth...
I don't like this. Now, would you be kind enough to leave my house, young man?
You are very slow to comprehend.
I comprehend that I have a lot to do, and I'd appreciate it if you leave. Otherwise, I'm going to call the police.
You may call anyone you choose, Mrs. Thomas.
I'll have you arrested.
I assure you I can detect your intention long before you have time to do me any harm.
We'll just see about this. Hello? Get me the police.
Helen, it's useless.
I can follow the call through the phone wire. Captain Townsend will answer.
Captain Townsend?
Captain, I want to report a robot.
A what?
A thing. It won't leave my house.
Who is this?
I'm Mrs. Tomlin, Professor Ansel Tomlin's wife, 44 Crescent Road.
I'll send the car over.
Now we'll see.
Is this the character that's been giving you trouble?
Yes, this is the one, officer.
I talked to you before about ruining the flower bed, Sonny. This time I'm taking you in.
I would advise you not to touch me. I cannot risk any damage.
I'll see about that. Come on outside.
I prefer to remain here until I complete my mission.
You do, huh? You know what this is?
It is a weapon you call a service revolver.
That's right. Then you'll either march out of here or I'll use it on you.
That would be most unfortunate.
All right, come on.
Officer, let me warn you. He's
march.
Dangerous.
March now. I'll count to three.
Officer, please.
One, two...
regret it, but he was actually going to pull the trigger. Only to frighten me. But I cannot risk damage. He might have miscalculated and struck me with a bullet.
Ansel, I'm frightened.
There is no need for fear. You have only to accept the fact that the Seventh Order is coming to operate the planet. for your benefit.
Answer.
Helen, there's no use trying to do anything just yet. Go next door to Mrs. Coleman. Tell her what's happened. I'll talk to George.
Oh, but I don't...
Please, Helen.
Well, all right.
Do you really think that you, a single robot, can conquer the Earth and make its people do your bidding?
I can.
Suppose it were demonstrated to you that you could not, that you could be destroyed.
If that were so, I would naturally report that this planet is unfit for development by the Seventh Order.
Well, you know they'll have you taken into custody for killing the officer.
I cannot permit it.
There will be needless slaughter.
Unless you can convince your people it is useless to attack me.
Hmm. Will you let me try?
I have no desire to prevent you. Go ahead. I detect that you are going to call the newspapers and the local television station and hold a press conference.
Yes.
I also detect that you have a plan to overcome me.
Oh?
I like that.
Really?
Yes. You see, in order to test this planet for development, I must know whether any of you are truly dangerous to us. You are a superior type of man, Professor. I welcome any plan to conquer me that you care to attempt.
Okay, George. At least we know where we stand. I'll phone the newspapers.
Quiet! Quiet, please! Quiet!
Hold it down.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Henry Bennett, broadcasting from a sound truck parked in front of the home of Professor Ansel Tomlin in Brentwood, Illinois. At the moment, Professor Tomlin is seated on his front porch. Next to him is a strange-looking blue robot-type creature, also seated on a chair. At the moment, we don't know if this is a hoax or not, but Professor Tomlin, a highly respected man here at the university, has called a press conference to introduce what is supposedly a creature from another planet. Professor Tomlin is about to speak, and we'll try to catch his words.
Quietly.
Gentlemen, I wish to present to you George of Xanthar. Yes, just a moment. George is a machine. Probably the most dangerous machine ever invented. He is telepathic as well. He can read your thoughts like a book. He knows exactly what each of you is thinking at this very instant.
Professor!
Yes?
Do you expect us to swallow this nonsense?
Not without proof, gentlemen.
Can George do his stuff for us? Let him tell me what I'm thinking right now.
You are thinking about a blonde young woman named Laura, with whom you will attend a show tonight.
Come on.
Well,
he happens to be right, but we've seen mind readers before. Let him do something else.
Now, I did not call you gentlemen here for a demonstration of magic. I called you here in the hopes that a good deal of needless bloodshed might be avoided. Less than half an hour ago, I watched this creature completely vaporize a policeman who was trying to arrest him. I expect that the authorities will be here any minute. I hope I can convince you and them that it is futile.
Well, I certainly do. Something ought to be done about a guy.
Yeah, either you're nuts or you think we are. I don't believe this machine killed a cop. If a cop was killed, a human did it, trying to blame it on the machine.
Now, gentlemen, I don't know how I can prove it. Perhaps if George will demonstrate his ability to vaporize...
Observe the oak tree in the front yard. Now.
Now, do you see?
I see, but I don't believe it. Boys, this is some kind of mass hypnotism. Maybe the tree was rigged up in advance.
I swear to you...
This George of Xanthar is all he's cracked up to be. Let's see what he does when I toss a rock at him.
Now, don't be a fool.
Here goes, George!
Stop him!
I
warned you. I tried to warn you.
Okay, everybody stand back. Stand back! Charlie, get that automatic rifle set up.
Check, Chief.
Professor, I advise you to step away from that kid.
Captain, for your own sake, don't try anything.
Step away, Professor.
Very well, but I warn you...
Okay, now don't fire till I'm ready, boys.
Right.
Now then, George of Watches, we don't know who's inside that tin suit, but I'm giving you just 10 seconds to come out.
Captain,
Hey, you're one on suspicion of murder. Now come out. All right, boys.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid we'll have to terminate our broadcast. What started out as a good-natured hoax or publicity stunt has turned into a bloody massacre, as the bodies of some 6 policemen on the lawn of Professor Tomlin's home will attest. I don't know exactly what is happening here, but I can say this. George of Xanthar is no hoax. He or it is the spearhead of a race from outer space that's come to conquer the Earth.
Have they all gone, Helen?
Yes.
Where is he?
In your library, reading.
Are the policemen still outside the house?
They're walking up and down. Oh, I hope they don't.
Yeah, they have orders not to try to harm him.
Ansel?
Yes?
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Oh, listen. He's coming. Mm.
Professor, Mrs. Tomlin, I have decided to walk through your town to learn more about its buildings and people.
And kill a few more humans?
Killing humans affords me no pleasure whatsoever. I kill only when damage to myself is possible. I hope that no one will attempt to harm me.
George, let me warn you now that this affair has gone beyond the confines of this town.
I am well aware of that, Professor. I am aware of a phone call being made this instant by your mayor to the commander of the Illinois State Guard.
If you're smart, you'll return to your ship and your planet.
My ship is destroyed. I could instruct you to build a new one, of course. But as I have no intention of leaving...
Then you will be destroyed.
No. I will destroy first.
Have you no conscience?
A conscience is a fifth-order failing. Needless baggage. Good evening.
Hello, Professor Tomlin. Yes. Yes, I will.
Who was it?
The mayor and the chief of police have called a meeting of the citizens of Brentwood at the college gymnasium tonight.
Ansel, you're not going.
I must.
But no,
Helen, there's much more at stake here than my life or yours. Civilization itself depends upon our standing up to this machine. I'm going to the meeting.
As Mayor Brentwood, I call this meeting to order. As you know, there is loose in our city a being with one purpose, to prepare it for conquest by similar beings. I think Professor Tomlin can tell us most about this being.
Well, if we could determine the source of George's power, he might be overcome. He is obviously vulnerable to force, such as a speeding bullet if it hit the right spot. However, he has the ability to read intent long before the commission of an act. He is probably listening to me now, even though he may be far away.
Mr. Mayor, why not track him down and all attack at once? Some of us would probably die, but he couldn't strike us all dead at once.
Oh, it's bombing!
Gentlemen, this humanoid is able to keep track of several hundred things simultaneously. As a matter of fact...
Gentlemen... You are working yourselves up needlessly. You simply do not appreciate what it would mean to dedicate yourselves to the fulfillment of the Seventh Order destiny. Your lives will be made most pleasant and happy by us.
Yeah, why did you kill 6 cops?
If you're so powerful, bring them back to life.
How do you want to be buried, Roy?
Yeah, let's get them, man.
And eyewitnesses report that in the end, when all were gone, George of Xanthar stood alone on the platform of the gymnasium. There was no movement except the twitching of the dead and those trampled by the crowd. Among the survivors was Professor Ansel Tomlin, who originally...
Well, that's that.
What next?
I don't know, Helen. I don't know.
What's that?
It sounds like an air raid alert.
That's peculiar. Yeah. They didn't announce it.
Turn on the radio. Hurry.
We interrupt to bring you a special message. All residents of Brentwood are advised to go to their basements or convenient bomb shelters. The governor has announced that units of the National Guard have managed to corner the robot, George of Xanthar, in the town square. Oh. Tanks and mortars will be used in an attempt to destroy the creature. Again, go to your nearest bomb shelter.
Oh, did you hear?
They'll never be able to destroy him.
Well, where are you going?
Up to the roof.
The roof?
I can see the square from there.
Well, I'm coming with you.
Just as you like. He's vaporizing every tank and gun they bring up.
Oh, Ansel, let's get away from here. Oh, what's that?
Those are army jets. We'll see how effective he is now. Oh. Oh, good Lord, a whole squadron up in smoke. It's no use. Can't you see it's no use?
Ansel, come inside, please.
Very well.
Oh, if only there was something we could do to tell
him. Not as long as he can read our every conscious thought before we can act.
What is it?
Our every conscious thought. Our thought. I wonder if...
What is it,
Nothing.
Ansel?
Nothing, Helen.
And the army reports that the countryside around Brentwood is deathly still. The blue humanoid, George of Xanthar, is still standing in the middle of the town square, where he's been standing for 3 days now. We'll keep you informed of developments. The military urges everyone to keep calm and go about your business as usual. There is no danger to anyone who is not attacking the humanoid.
No danger. What's to keep more of them from landing? Ansel, are you going to sit there with your head in your hands forever?
Mm.
Well, come have some dinner. Mm. Ansel?
Mm. Yeah, it might work.
Where are you going?
Washington.
What?
I'm going to Washington. Would you be good enough to pack my overnight bag? I can catch a plane out of Chicago in about 2 hours.
But why? What for?
I'm going to talk to the Pentagon.
What do you tell them?
I'm going to tell them to surrender to George of Xanthar.
Our microphones are here at the edge of the town square in Brentwood, Illinois, today, ladies and gentlemen, to witness the most unusual spectacle of modern history. A discussion of terms whereby the United States of America may surrender to the humanoid George of Xanthar. For the occasion, an honor guard of 22 servicemen from all branches and all parts of the country has been chosen. In just a moment, the honor guard will accompany General of the Armies Walter Pitt, who will discuss the surrender. The honor guard is advancing to the edge of the square. The robot is standing there now, carefully eyeing the soldiers. Every ounce of his concentration seems to be going into it. Actually, we're told his telepathic circuits are probing their minds for some hint of danger, a thought, a flicker of an eyelash may be sufficient for him to vaporize all of them. General Pitt is about to speak.
George of Xanthar?
I hear you, General.
I have been instructed to consult with you about your intentions toward our country and the world in general, with a view to reaching some sort of agreement with you and others of your kind, who you say will invade the Earth.
May I approach?
One moment. I perceive no intent to harm me. There is one man among your soldiers, however, who has an illogical thought. Will the soldier who is thinking the thought, 11 o'clock, step closer?
Do as he says.
Does 11 o'clock mean anything to you, soldier?
No, sir. It's running through my mind, but it don't mean a thing to me.
My examination of your thoughts tells me you speak the truth. Very well. We will proceed with the talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a tense moment. The general and the humanoid are discussing terms. The soldier who was questioned about the thought, 11 o'clock, has stepped back into the ranks and is holding his rifle at attention like the others. I perceive it's now 10:59 a.m. If there is any significance to the thought about which the soldier was questioned, we'll know in 1 minute.
We of Xanthar, gentlemen, would not want to improve a planet which could not be educated and would continually oppose our program. Therefore, I am glad to see your willingness to discuss. After my message goes out, there will be a landing party on Earth within a few days. While waiting for the party, however, there are certain preparations.
Just list them for us.
Your government will naturally have to turn over complete authority to us. Afterward, we will utilize your press and radio to disseminate our instructions to your people. Simultaneously in other nations, the same procedure will be carried out by our rep.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's happened at exactly 11 a.m. 10 soldiers in the honor guard instantaneously fired their weapons into George of Xanthar. Apparently, explosive bullets have blown him to smithereens. The remains are lying scattered all over the square. People are pouring in, kissing each other, shouting.
Wonderful?
Wonderful, really wonderful. I'm sorry I couldn't come home sooner. It would have spoiled my whole plan if I'd gotten within telepathic range.
Your plan?
Yes.
But what? How? What?
Just a matter of simple psychology. Those men in the honor guard.
What about them? Did you know any of them?
Not exactly, but I did have the job of hypnotizing 10 of them.
Hypnotized?
That's right. You see, each of those men was hypnotized. And while he was under, we planted a post-hypnotic suggestion, namely, to fire at George of Xanthar when a soldier named Charlie started to cough. Charlie was told to cough at 11 o'clock. Before we released them from hypnosis, we told them to erase everything from their conscious memories. I was staking everything in the hope that George could only tune in on the conscious mind, not the subconscious, and it worked.
Oh.
Yeah, there was nothing to be reached by George's prying mind, so we never knew what was going to happen. At 11 o'clock, the soldier named Charlie coughed. The men raised their guns and fired. And that was the end of George of Xanthar. Now, if you don't mind, I've got some exam papers to mark.
On a planet many millions of miles away, a red light, one of many on a giant control board, suddenly winked out. A blue humanoid made an entry in a large book, System 29578. Planet 3 inhabited. Too dangerous for any kind of development. You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the Alan Kogan story titled In the Cards. It was one thing to safeguard the future, but something else to see someone you love cry in terror 2 years from now. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Seventh Order, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Jerry Sowell and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were James Monks, Nelson Olmsted, Kate Wilkinson, James Rafferty, Dick Hamilton, Reese Taylor, Jim Stevens, Robert Hastings, Wayne Chappelle. The commentator was W.W. Chaplin, your announcer Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. The Wonderful World of Robert Benchley on Biography and Sound tonight on NBC Radio.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from the 8th of May, 1956. And thanks for listening to This Hour of Science Fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, an episode of Suspense from late in that series run from December 28, 1958. Frank Lovejoy stars, who was a regular on radio since the 1940s and at the time of this episode also a regular on television, as he played McGraw in The Adventures of McGraw, which lasted just one season.
What was it, Wago? It had to be something with a new look. It had to be something simple. Maybe something as simple as you having a promotion contract with the champ, so you could say who he fights and when he fights. You know that fighting the champ is the most important thing in the world of sales. How did you tell him? Let me see if I can quote you. Look, kid, you got to lose this fight because you know I got a lot to say about who fights in this division. If you want to crack at the champ, or even if you want to fight at all, you've got to lose this fight to the Dutchman. Nobody's going to know about it, nobody except you and me. But I want you to think about it. Remember, if you want to crack at the champ, you've got to lose this one. Is that the way it was?
Look, the kid's a natural. Hasn't even reached his peak. He'll have 7-10 years being champ, so it's going to hurt him just this once.
You should see the way it's hurting him. But it's all over now. It has to be. My knowing about it makes it all over. It had to be just a private thing between you and him.
So? It could still be a private thing between the three of us.
Well, I don't know about that. I'd have to have something in writing.
In writing?
You know, something that said you wouldn't discriminate against the kid, that everything would be just as it was before you and he had the friendly talk.
Show Mr. McGraw.
I don't like the clamps on my arm. About that piece of paper.
That was Frank Lovejoy as TV's McGraw. He stars now in Suspense in the 32nd of December.
Suspense. And the producer of CBS Radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Tampering with time has been an ambition of man since he first realized how inexorably he is time's slave. At this time of the year, although we have even less time on our hands, time is much in our minds. We make a magic ritual of New Year's Eve when we suppose we can flush away all our past impurities and begin afresh at that magic hour of midnight on the 31st of December. But suppose we couldn't. Suppose the 31st of December were not the end. Listen. Listen then as Mr. Frank Lovejoy stars in the 32nd of December.
And now, the 32nd of December, starring Mr. Frank Lovejoy, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
New Year's Eve. As far as I was concerned, when I got up the morning of December 31st, it could stay 1958 forever. The only trouble is time doesn't work that way. Time is a downhill ride in a car with no brakes. You can't stop it even if your life depends on it. And mine did.
Joe, your breakfast is getting cold.
I'm coming. All I have time for is a cup of coffee anyway. What is this, milk? Don't we ever have anything but milk to put in the coffee?
You know we can't afford cream these days. We can hardly afford to eat.
Molly, you'll be wearing mink yet. Just give me a little more time.
Yeah, you've been saying that ever since we got married.
Well, sooner or later, Molly, I'm going to make it. By the way, honey, let me have your ring.
Why?
Well, you said the diamond's loose. I'll drop it at the jeweler's on my way to the office.
Oh, we can't afford to get it fixed now.
Molly, that's an expensive ring. We can't afford not to take care of it.
Joe, have you been gambling again?
Oh, now, Molly, I told you, I'm all through with that.
You told me the same thing just before you pawned your watch. And the cufflinks I gave you on our first anniversary.
I'm not going to pawn your engagement ring. Now, let me have it. I'll pick it up on my way home tonight.
Well, all right, but, Joe...
What?
Remember, it's very precious, at least to me.
Sure. Sure, I've been gambling again, and I was in the hole bad. The boys wanted the payoff by midnight, and this time they weren't going to take no for an answer. If I couldn't raise the dough on Molly's ring, I didn't know what I'd do.
The pawn shop was like any other pawn shop, dirty and gloomy, full of junk, with clocks ticking all over the place. One thing caught my eye as soon as I came in. In the front case, a watch, curiously ornate, obviously very old. It sort of glowed in the case. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
You like to look at the watch?
No. No, it's very interesting, but... How much can I get on this ring?
On this, I can lend you
$150. $150? The guy I won it off claimed it was worth more than $1,000.
$150.
I can probably get $500 for it easy.
Then you would be foolish to accept my offer.
That's the best you can do.
$150.
I'll take it.
I will get the money.
While I waited, I felt my eyes drawn to the antique watch again. I picked it up. It felt warm in my hand, almost as if it were alive. Its face was covered with all sorts of dials and figures. The date of the month, phase of the moon, even the signs of the zodiac. Some of the dials I couldn't read at all. They were inscribed with strange characters, like hieroglyphics or ancient Sanskrit. Suddenly, I felt I had to have that watch.
100, 20, 40, 45, 150.
Can you tell me what all these dials mean?
I can tell you only that this watch controls many kinds of time. The fellow who pawned it claimed it could make time pass as slowly or as rapidly as he desired.
That's a pretty good trick.
Mm-hmm. But only a trick. Time is different for each of us, is it not?
What do you mean?
To men sitting on a hot stove, 1 second lasts forever. But to a man making love, forever is only a second.
Yeah, I see what you mean. How much are you asking for the watch?
$150. Excuse me. Hello. Yes, one moment, please. Is your name Joe Adcock?
Yeah, why?
Yes, Mr. Adcock is here.
Who is it?
Who is calling? Hello. Hello? That is odd.
Nobody knew I was coming here. Who was it?
He did not identify himself. He just said, I would not believe him. Then he hung up.
It's funny. Say, now what about the guy who pawned this watch? Any chance of him wanting it back?
No, Mr. Adcock. He will not return for it. He has no further use for the watch.
Okay. Well, then I'll take it. I don't know why, but I've got to have it. I had no business buying the watch. It was a crazy thing to do. I hadn't walked more than a few steps from the pawn shop when I learned just how crazy.
Hold it, Adcock.
Well, who are you?
Just one of the boys.
What do you want?
A little talk. Private. In the alley here.
But I don't have...
In the alley.
Ow, my arm.
You got the grand, Adcock.
I got until midnight to get it.
Yeah, that's right. The boss just wants me to make sure you don't forget. Like last time.
Oh, I won't forget, I promise.
I'll be waiting for you at midnight, right here by the pawn shop. Oh, and one more thing.
So what is it?
This.
Oh.
That's just to make sure you don't forget. If you don't show up with the dough, there ain't going to be no New Year for you. You understand?
Yes, I understand.
Good. See you at midnight.
I had to get back the 150. Maybe I could make a fast killing at the track with it, or something. I had to get it back.
Oh, back so soon, Mr. Adcock?
Yes, I made a mistake.
We all make mistakes. That is life.
Look, I've got to have that money back. Here's your watch.
My watch, Mr. Adcock? this is your watch. You bought it.
But I don't want it. I want the money.
A deal is a deal.
But you don't understand.
It is you who do not understand, Mr. Adcock. To sell the watch, you must find a buyer. I am not buying.
But look, you got to help me. Well, will you take the watch in pawn?
Of course. That is my business.
Well, how much can I get for it?
$5.
$5? Just a few minutes ago, I paid $150 for it.
It is unfortunate that I do not value it so highly now. $5?
No, thanks. $5 wouldn't help me. I had to have money, big money. My only chance now was to try to borrow it.
I know you've had an account here for years, Mr. Adcock, and of course we like to do what we can for our regular customers, but unless you have some collateral...
Well, what kind of collateral?
Oh, stocks, bonds, real estate.
If I had that kind of stuff, I wouldn't need the loan.
$500? Joe, you're crazy. Hey, bartender, another beer.
All right, Harry. Make it a C note. Anything.
Yeah, well, what about the C note you borrowed last August?
Oh, I'll pay you back. Honest.
Yeah, I heard that last August.
Oh, Harry, how long have you known me?
10 years, I guess.
All right, 10 years. Doesn't that count for anything?
For a C note, it don't.
Oh, but Harry.
No.
Not a dime. Not a lousy dime. Only one thing left to do.
Flower shop.
Molly, I want you to come home right now.
Joe, aren't you at work?
No, I'm home.
Well, what's the matter? Are you sick?
I'm all right. Just come home and hurry.
Joe, what's wrong?
We've got to get out of town. Fast. It took only a few minutes to throw everything Molly and I owned into suitcases. I kept looking at the watch, wondering when Molly was going
to
show up.
At the tone signal, the correct time will be 2:30.
2:30? What's keeping her? Well, at least the watch is on time. I wonder when I ought to wind it. Might as well do it right now. If I can figure out which one of these knobs to use, I'll try this one. What the devil? Where did the sun go? It was shining a minute ago. Now it's snowing. Oh, blasted, I did get the wrong knob. I moved it back to the 28th, so now I've got... Hey, wait a minute. The 28th was Sunday, the day we had the big snowstorm. Could the watch have... Ah, it's impossible. I set it back to the 31st, and I... Now the sun is shining. Did the watch change the day, or am I losing my mind? Maybe I could set it again, test it. Let me see. I was in that pawn shop just before 1 o'clock. I set the hour hand back to 12:45. There, now we'll see. Is this the Third Avenue pawn shop?
Yes.
Is Joe Adcock there?
One moment, please. Is your name Joe Adcock?
Am I?
Yes, Mr. Adcock is here.
Who is it?
Who is calling?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you. I could hardly believe it myself. But there was no question about it. The watch did control time. Once I grasped that fact, I began to realize its implications. For the first time in my life, I could have all the time I needed, all the time I wanted.
Joe. Oh, Joe, what's wrong?
Not a thing, Molly, not a thing.
But you said we had to leave town.
Oh, did I? Well, that's all over now.
Joe, what are you talking about? I'll probably lose my job.
Now, don't get excited. Well, I might as well tell you the whole story. I lied to you about the gambling, Molly. I'm $1,000 in debt. I've got to pay off by midnight, but...
You pawned my ring. didn't you?
Well, now, don't worry. I'll get it back.
You lied to me.
I said I'll get it
you
back.
You have no right to pawn it. It's mine. I want my ring,
all
Joe.
Right, I'll get it.
Now, right now.
I haven't got time now. I've got to get back to the bank before it closes.
Get my ring, you promised.
Will you quit nagging me about your blasted ring? Let me get back to the bank. We'll have enough money to buy you a dozen rings.
Joe, what are you going to do?
I'm going to rob the bank. What else? I had the watch figured out right. Robbing the bank would be as easy as taking pennies from a blind man. It was 3:02 when I walked into the bank and headed for the vault.
Oh, hello, Mr. Adcock. Back again, I see.
Yeah, I've got to get into my safety deposit box.
Certainly, go right ahead.
Good. Nobody else in here. Now, I just turn the watch back to Sunday, the 28th.
It worked.
I'm locked in the vault, and it's Sunday. Now, let's see where they keep the ready cash. There it is. Stacks of it, and all mine. Well, that's plenty for now. Enough to pay the mob and more. There's always more where this comes from. Now, reset the watch to December 31st. Perfect. The perfect crime. All I have to do is get out of here without letting them see the money.
Mr. Adcock.
Yes?
A happy and prosperous new year to you, sir.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. Molly! Hey, Molly. Molly, it worked. We're rich.
Have you been drinking?
No, not a drop. Here, look at this. Go on. Pick them up. They're real.
Joe, these are $1,000 bills. Where did you get them?
I robbed the bank.
Oh, come on, Joe.
I always told you I'd make it big someday. Well, today is the day. Now, you go out and buy yourself a dress. We're going to celebrate New Year's Eve in style.
Happy New Year, Joe. Happy New Year.
Yeah, come on. Let's get out of this crowd.
It's almost midnight. I thought we were going to celebrate. You were going to take me to a nightclub.
Yeah. But first, I got to meet a guy at midnight. Come on.
Who?
A guy. I got to pay off that gambling debt.
Well, where are you meeting him?
It's just a block away in front of the pawn shop.
The pawn shop? My ring. Joe, you forgot my ring.
Oh, for Pete's sake. I'll get your lousy ring back. Just give me a little time.
Oh, a little time. That's the story of your life, isn't it, Joe? Just give me a little time. Well, all right. I'll give you all the time you want, all the rest of your life. I'm through with you, Joe. I just can't take it anymore.
Molly, don't leave me. Molly, come back.
Happy New Year.
Well, what happened? Molly just disappeared. The street is deserted. Molly! Hey, where is everybody? I wonder if this crazy watch had anything to do with the 32nd. It should have clicked over to January 1st. Oh, no wonder everybody disappeared there. Isn't any 32nd of December. I'll just reset it. It's stuck. It won't budge. Oh, it's got to move. It's just... Oh, no. It can't be broken. I can't stay in the 32nd of December forever. I've got to fix it. I've got to get the back off. I've got to get it to works. But there's nothing inside. It's the 32nd of December. And it will always be the 32nd of December.
Suspense. in which Frank Lovejoy starred in William N. Robeson's production of The 32nd of December, written by Morris Lee Greene and William Walker. Supporting Frank Lovejoy in The 32nd of December were Joan Banks, Barney Phillips, Sam Pierce, and Norm Alden. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight, Thrill with Gunsmoke on the CBS Radio Network.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 28th of December, 1958 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of classic radio on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.